Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in life, our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment, this beautiful journey of life. Today, I will be speaking with Paul Amadeus Lane. He's an accessibility consultant, he's a TV and radio personality, and he is actually one of the hosts of Tech Zone right here in KMET 1490 AM. We will be talking about resiliency, love, learning, and all that he has created for his heart to move on and for his success. Then I will be speaking to Behnoosh Babazani. She's a social entrepreneur, public speaker, certified life coach, and the author of Hold On While I Hang On. Behnoosh will also speak about her resiliency and her ups through the multiple illnesses and her triumph through her mind shift. I'm going to tell you what I was going through this week as the tip of the week that I usually share with you. I've been pondering and sharing with you for a couple of weeks about choosing kindness and how is it that when we as humans have the option of being kind, we become mean. Well, this week I got a little bit of a dose of that. I needed it. I needed to get that dose to really, really think about it. So this is what happened. I picked up my phone very cordially and introduced myself. A woman on the other side stated that she was an attorney from an office which had sent a subpoena for a medical record and was wondering why I had not replied. I began explaining about the HIPAA rule of confidentiality regarding my client and client's privilege when she cut me off and told me that she's the one who's the attorney and she's the expert in the law and that I was totally wrong. So I felt my frustration level rise by her tonality of the superiority and top-to-down hostile tone. I tried to cordially explain and she again did her style of communication. After about 5 minutes, as I'm thinking that this is a waste of my time and then projected that this person wants to dominate me, manipulate me, create a fight and then win it, I went on an attack mode and raised my voice and told her that she was inefficient and had no knowledge of our field and she was wasting her time and mine. Then she threatened me and then I hung up. Then screamed so loud in my room that my husband ran downstairs to see what happened. And obviously, I shared this story the way I wanted to, which made me very much the innocent victim. And that I had the right to be angry. And this woman had no right to do that. Well, he offered a very simple solution. I was not going to do what he said or do the attorney's jobs for her and declined the easy solution that my husband gave me. I was just going to be angry for a while. Thank God, about 2 minutes into this, I really started looking. That didn't go well, and that didn't go as I said I was going to be committed to myself and how to be and how to act and how to conduct myself and be kind. So the question comes up again for me, when I had the choice to be kind, how come I decided to be mean at that moment? This is what I noticed, I reflected, and I wanted to share with you. See if that also happens to you. I noticed that when it all becomes about me, I'm busy, I'm tired, I don't have time, I don't want to deal with this, I've dealt with this case so long, I'm being attacked, I'm being bullied, I'm being manipulated, I'm being threatened, I don't want to do this, kindness is nowhere to be found. It truly takes a sharing space and not just the me space to have the capacity of kindness. So how can I get out of the me space? I looked at where in that process I could have stopped the me space. Actually, what I realized was from the beginning, the minute I heard who she was and what she was going to say, I was already in my mindset about what I was going to say, and she would have no room to have a say-so. The poor woman never had a chance to put a word in ward in, even though it appeared that I listened so cordially to what she said. And the rest, as you know, was history. It truly takes a sharing and a win-win state of mind and being to create and cultivate kindness. I believe that it is an intended state of being. You have to intentionally be out there in order to create that way of being with another person so you can share with them and you can be kind with them. Not a reactive state of being, which in my mind, you're out there, you're the enemy, and it's all about me. So again, my intention and promise is to be and to create a state of kindness. And I wish that for you. May you experience the pleasure of kindness inside your body and share it with everyone out there. Please reach out to me and connect and share messages through Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn, any of those social medias at Dr. Fujian Zane. And I love to hear from you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with amazing guests. Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and I am so excited to have Paul Amadeus Lane with us. He is an accessibility consultant, a TV and radio personality, and brand ambassador, and a keynote speaker, and an MC. And I'm glad to have Paul with us because I really want to talk about resiliency. Paul, you know, we really need resiliency right now, right? We're going through, you know, so many months of the COVID-19 where people have lost loved ones, where people have lost some capacity in their own body, the fears, people have lost their jobs, people have lost their openness in, you know, having to go out. And then right as we're going through that, we are entering an era which I actually think is beautiful, but to go through learning about the pain and the suffering of humans, about Black Americans, about people who are colored, people, everything. It's like you look at resiliency of what people have gone through, the pain that they have gone through, and what each person or each group or each culture has had to go through in order to pull through. And as I heard your story and your life, what brought for me is this concept of resiliency. What one has to say to pass through life and keep coming up, you know. And I want you to share your own experience with all who are watching or hearing us. So welcome to the show.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm a huge fan of yours and love your show on our station, so you're doing an amazing job. I would like to say, before you go through something, you have no idea of how you're going to react. And it's because we fear the unknown. We don't know what's going to happen. So when you're going through something, two things can happen. Either you'll learn from it or you run from it. And if you run from it, then you start going down that deep slippery slope where you may not come back from trying to overcome any challenges. You get into your feelings and you're just not a nice or a happy person. And that happened to me early on when I had my accident back in 1993. I went through bouts of depression, didn't want to live. And it was just one of those things where I felt like, why me? And you know what, Dr. Fujian, what someone told me one day that stuck in my mind, they said, when you say, why me, you wish it upon someone else. Why not someone else? And I never want to do that. I never want to wish this on even my worst enemy that I have. So that really helped me to change my mindset and my thinking, like, hey, this is what happened to me. I'm a quadriplegic. I'm paralyzed. Let me just make the best of it.
Yep. But there's a part that shows up that I don't even know what the best is, right? Like if I've never been there before, and then I show up and something happens to my body where I really have to utterly experience my powerlessness, and I don't know what the best is, or what was the best for you ever going back to pre-accident, or that just wasn't possible. So then how would you imagine what the best is? Or can you imagine, or is it more like day by day, you just see the tomorrow?
That's a really good question. And the way I can answer that is, you never really know until you go through it. And of course, you try to look back in the past to see how you were. But sometimes that can bring on greater depression, especially if you're not able to do certain things. So what I had to do was, I had to look at things where I was helping others that brought joy, that I can still do even in my current state, like making people smile, making people laugh, being there for them, asking them how their day is going. So those are some of the things that I look back in the past. But when I started to dwell on things that I wasn't able to do anymore, that's kind of when I would get into this whirlwind of like, oh, wow, always me. I can't do these things anymore. But then I had to pivot back to just how I made other people feel, made them laugh, make them smile. And then what begins to happen is you look for ways to adapt to the things you used to do before. Like I was a huge musician before my accident. So I had to look for ways to now create music in my current state. I was a video gamer, so I had to learn how to play games in my current state. I wasn't able to be an emergency medical technician anymore because I couldn't walk, use my fingers. So couldn't get back in the medical field. So I shift my focus into just hustling, just trying to look for ways to create things, and decided to get into broadcasting. And then that's when like the whole floodgate started to open up, where I was able to not only impact the way I was feeling, but others as well, and try to share with them my experiences and to just keep going. Don't stop and don't let anything bring you down. Or if something does bring you down, get right back up. Get right back up.
So I'm also hearing, Paul, that if you could not use parts of your body, you went to give power to the parts of your body that you could use, which was your brain, your heart, your voice, the way you looked at people, the way you connected with people. And you really put a lot of emphasis on that. And that's how like the broadcasting and, you know, interviewing and seeing what was out there and bringing it and sharing it with the world started for you?
Absolutely. And you know what else helped too was when I would look at others who are in similar or worse situations than me. Sometimes we do that and we have kind of a lack of humility when we do that. Because sometimes we look and say, wow, at least I'm not bad as them or I'm better off than them. Whenever we do that, we put ourselves on a pedestal, and that's not right. We look at the person who may be worse off than us and say, look at what they're doing. Look how they are still moving and going forward and not letting it stop them down. I'm inspired by them. So what happens is we have this whirlwind of this inspiration that goes around from one person to the next. When we view others as superior to us and looking what they're going through and see how we can assist them and help them. And that really helps us to have that mindset, because being humans, we have a tendency to be on the side of being selfish and worried about ourselves. And when we do that, we miss a golden opportunity to inspire others, to empower others, and in turn have that interchange of empowerment that can really help us just grow as individuals.
I totally agree with what you're saying. And there's also another side of it that sometimes I know I have experienced, which when I look at the worst case scenarios and I see the depth of resilience and how they come through and how they contribute to the world, my fear goes away, mm-hmm. you know? So I totally get you that you're saying when you look from superiority to someone that it doesn't have all you have, and you gain something out of that, but that's not something to be gained out of. But there's also this part of what if I get there and then you're afraid, and then you look at someone who's is there and right. resilient and pushing through and creating an amazing life, and you're like, okay, well, if that's the case, I can do it too, you know? That yeah. That way of looking at it too. But have you ever considered that?
Yeah. You know, I look at others and inspired. Like, I'm inspired by you, what you're doing, and how you have this message and it's following and really having some positivity on the airwaves and in the media. Because let's face it, even in the media world, we have all this negativity going around. Everybody wants to be the next pundit, no matter if it's local radio, local television, local TV. They want to just be have the shocking type of content and try to get followers instead of really trying to touch people out there and make everyone better and think of things in a positive but thought-provoking way. And you know, Dr. Fujian, one thing that I've noticed, the things that happen to me in my life prepares me for other disappointments too. Because even though, you know, I've had a pretty cool career, there's been disappointments along the way. Like when it comes to even in my line of work, you know, at one time I was the morning show host, and you know, I really appreciated that. But what happened was there was a tug of war when it comes to my vision, other people's visions. And it came to a head where we all mutually decided to part ways. But then like a week later, it was like a good friend of mine, you know, decided to host the morning show along with another good friend of mine. And I felt, at first I felt hurt, I felt anger, but then I looked at, wow, I'm glad for them. I'm glad that they have this opportunity to really showcase their talents. And I was their biggest cheerleader, you know, from the sideline. That helped me to see that that was the best thing that ever could have happened to me. Because when I was no longer doing the morning show, I made other contacts when I did my tech show, spun it off to an entertainment show, accessibility show, met a lot of people out there, became an accessibility consultant, keynote speaker, spoke in front of the United States, the EEOC. All these things opened up. And if I was still on that morning show, it would have never happened. So when things happen in our lives, never look at it as it's the end all to be all. Look at it as opportunities that will come up, and we'll have other things that can happen along the way that it just shows how beautiful overcoming challenges is. Never let it get you down.
There's, as I hear you, I'm also sensing that you have to have a big heart to go beyond the humanness of the other side of the humanness, the part of humanness that we have that only looks at us, ours, mine, and go beyond that in order to create that. One of the conversations, Paul, that I'm having, and I want to share it with you too, and see, you know, just can we hold hands and create this all together?
Absolutely.
How can we create kindness movement and systematic, you know, we have systematic racism, we have systematic brutalness, we have systematic anger, we have systematic wars. Even in when you look at the gaming industry, it's all kind of like a violent game. When you look at media, it's like news, you know, action films, everything that's going on is like war, kill, 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 get those adrenaline up. And then somehow we don't have like kindness movement and systematic kindness. And that's what we really need. Like when you're looking at the movement that is, you know, showing up now with so many millions of people around the globe, getting up, going out, stating their voice, sharing their voice, being together, you know, for the Black Lives Matters. It's a different kind of way of being. It's being kind together, being, you know, seeing each other. And maybe it's time for that too.
I totally agree with you. And when we look at just the discord that we have, not only in this country, but around the world, social media has a lot to do with it. I'm a huge social media proponent. I think it's great. That's how we can keep in contact with our relatives who live in different states or part of the world whenever a catastrophe happens, so we can find out if they're safe when all the phone lines are down. There's a dark side of social media. And it has to do with, we feel that people want to hear our opinion. And case in point, I was on social media the other day, and a couple of my friends on social media who are not persons of color had a problem with getting rid of Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben. They had a problem with that. And I don't necessarily comment on posts like that because I try to fall back, because I try to see where they're coming from. But in instances like that, persons who are not of color should never have an opinion of what offends a person with color. Such as a man should not have an opinion if a woman has been abused. A man should never say, oh, get over it. No, we have no idea how that woman feels, the impact of her life. So I think on social media, some people have been empowered to spew nonsense that they wouldn't tell you to their face. And I think this has caused all this discord that we have. Now, what we can do now to help this kindness movement is maybe not comment on that posts where everybody can see, but maybe send them a private message and say, hey, you know, I saw your post. You know, it really intrigued me. Why do you feel that way? Let's find out why people feel that way and then try to have an honest discussion with them. Because when we attack people, they are on the defensive. They don't want to have them change their mindset, especially if our mission is to change their mind, to get them on the same movement of kindness. Then we want to have a private one-on-one with that person. As soon as you try to say something in public where everybody can see, then it's like everybody's fighting, their friends jump in, your friends jump in. And before you know it, you have all this beef on Twitter and social media. But I think if we have honest conversations with ones out there who may not agree with us in a private setting, I think we can change the minds out there. People like to show out. That's what my mother used to say when I was growing up. Boy, don't go over here and show out, meaning don't show your behind to people. Act like you got some sense. And that's what we can do even as adults. It seems like, Dr. Fujian, that adults are acting like children now. And it's crazy. The things that we would get in trouble with at school, people are acting that way now. And it's mind-boggling. I don't know if you've seen that too, but it's crazy.
Yeah. I know that for me, I started learning how ignorant I am. And then I opened my ears and my heart and humility in, I don't know. And I'm always going to have opinions. And my opinion goes out. And then when it comes back, then my ears open. I'm serious. I went to, you know, for me, it was more like, you know, when I voted for Obama, and Obama was like, of course there were issues, but see, obviously it's done, you know, look, Obama's up there and we all love him and it's all done. Like, see? And, I remember going to India with, black women, some of our friends who were together. And I remember, you know, having a discussion, and for the first time in my life, they brought up conversation about systematic racism. I had no clue. I was completely ignorant. And my ears open. I'm like, wow. You know? And even with the conversations like you were just having about Dan Jeremiah, many of these things, oh, you know, I don't, this concept because I think that everything that's there, it's supposed to be there, and why are you taking it away? So my first emotion was, why are you taking these statues out? Or why are you doing this? And why are you doing that? So yeah, my opinion shows up because I'm a human being. I'm going to have opinions because that's what my brain does. But to also to be open that that can be so ignorant and I can be open to, like, my, it's almost like my opinion, it could be formed as a question. It might be showing up as an opinion, but it's more like, can you please teach me, like the world, can you teach me? Because I don't know. I'm coming only from one-sided based on my own experience. And I can open my eyes, my ears, my heart to really learn about all these different types of experiences that are out there. And I don't need to fight about it. I just need to grow and expand myself around it, you know? So I really am grateful for the times because people are having the ability to talk. People are have. This is the first time that I'm getting so educated about you know, Blacks in America. I've never had the opportunity to be this educated. So I'm grateful for it.
Now, and you know what, to be fair and honest to Dr. Fujan is, we as African Americans too, we have to do the same with other races. You know, we have to find out more, you know, about your upbringing, your background. You know, we all have to find out all about each other. And I think when we find out about each other, have empathy towards each other, and not feeling because we're one race that we deserve all this empathy. No, everyone deserves empathy. We're all human beings. And I think that's sometimes lost in the discussion. And it goes back to just how selfish we are as imperfect humans. You know, we're like, well, why are you trying to look down on me? Why are you trying, you know, instead of taking offense when a dialogue happens, what I've learned over time, and my wife tries to teach me this, don't take offense all the time. Just, you know, try to see where people are coming from. And this happens in family settings, happens in friendships and everything. And what's the old saying? We were created with two ears and one mouth, so we need to do twice as much as listening than talking. So that's one thing that I try to thrive myself on. And to look at the love that we have in the world today, I'll tell you a little experience, if you don't mind, about a mutual friend that we both have, Sharia Astroglow, the award-winning actress. I was covering Comic-Con about a couple of years ago. We were in a press room for, what's the show? I'm drawing a blank right now. The Expanse. And I just got through interviewing Sharia and also Frankie Abrams, who was her co-actor. After the interview, we walked out of the room. Sharia came up to me and said, "I love your shirt. Can I take a picture with you?" And I'm like stunned because, number one, here I am, a disabled African-American man. I'm not known. And here this award-winning actor wants to take a picture with me and ask my permission to post it on her social media. And I was like, heck yeah. So to me, that just showed the experience. There's a lot of good people in the world that love us. We really need to start talking about that too.
Yeah.
There's some great individuals out there. We never want to discount the fact we need to tell those humanitarian stories more in the media so that we can show that we can all grow together.
Yeah, that's the systematic kindness that we could have, you know, so we could definitely move toward that experience. And it's not that we're not going to have the other side, you know, we're going to have the yelling and screaming matches because we're human, but to come back to what it was, the same thing like you said, I can be upset if my show is taken away or we're not having. I can be upset that that happens, but that's okay. That's just being human. But how can I open my heart and give, you know, kind of like release them with love, and then love shows up and I can also go on to things better than I can, you know, that is better for me in my life, and I expand. And I think that's what I got from you also today.
You got it, my friend. And just one other thing too, if you don't mind me sharing, you know, when we talk about police brutality, I have an opinion on it because of my own experiences. And it was an experience that I shared with ABC News a little over 3 weeks ago. My brother and I, we were on our way to the ministry. And we had on suits, ties, you know, we were dressed sharp, Dr. Fujian. You know, we were like CNR men back then. Some of the young kids don't know what CNR is. CNR clothing is, but that we were sharp. We had CNR suits on. And we were on our way, and seven cop cars got behind us.
Seven.
Pulled us over at gunpoint. Just so happened, my mother is always late when she goes places. So this time we were glad she was. My mother pulled up, saw us, pulled over in a car, got out the car, and asked the police officers, "What in the world are you doing to my sons?" They had us down on the ground, gunpoint. They said, "Oh, we're sorry, ma'am. This car looked like the same car that was in a robbery." Now, mind you, the car was a champagne-colored Toyota Corolla. How many champagne-colored Toyota Corollas are out in the world, right? So that, at age 13, shaped my view as far as being a target by police. And even though being disabled now, I don't drive, I'm a passenger in a car, I can't walk. What if an officer doesn't take my explanation when I say I can't walk and try to use excessive force to try to pull me out of the car? What's going to happen when he sees my wheelchair and gets frustrated? Now, I'm not saying they're not good people in law enforcement, because I used to, when I was an EMT, I worked with some great off cops. I have relatives that are in law enforcement. They're amazing people. Those are stories that, right there, that ones who feel that we as people of color shouldn't be scared out there. I wish ones could go into our minds, the ones who've been victims of this, to see what we are really coming from. And that's why I'm so glad we have ones like you on the air that have these uncomfortable conversations that we need to have.
We need to have a lot of cultural changes, a lot. And I think cultural changes happen first with listening with our hearts to each other, understanding each other, going toward the love and kindness so that we can live together in this world of, you know, the earth that we have. I know people are trying to get onto Moon and Mars, but I think if we can't figure it out here, we're going to probably not figure it out there either. So might as well, let's figure it out here.
You know, there's an old saying, you can take a person out the hood, but you can't take the hood out the person. So that'll happen. You can take the ignorance out of a person on Earth, but it's going to follow them from the Mars and everything else.
Exactly, Paul. So let's just do it here. Tell people where they can find you, Paul Amadeus Lane.
Thank you so much again for allowing me to be on. You can go to my website, paulamadeuslane.com. That connects you to all my social media, all the shows that I do, all the projects that I've worked on. And thank you again, Dr. Fujian. I've always been a big fan of yours.
Thank you.
Love what you do. Keep fighting the good fight. And we're glad to have an ally like you, not only on the station, but just in our fight for humanity and empathy out there. You keep up doing the good work as well.
Thank you. It's been a blessing to have you. And for all of us, all of you who are out there listening and viewing us, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with our next author. Bye-bye.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I'm excited to have Behnoosh Babzani with me. She's a social entrepreneur, a public speaker, a certified life coach and mind coach, and the author of Hold On While I Hang On. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you, Dr. Fujian. I'm so happy to be here.
It's so nice to see you again. I know that you have gone through a lot, and I want us to also talk about resiliency and what it takes from inside to go through what you have gone through. And I know that in this era that we're talking, resilience means a lot, whether, you know, we're going through the COVID-19 for so many months and people really need their resilience through this time. And while we're also going through all of the conversations about racial tension, about the traumas that people have gone through. And I think that every one of us have some sort of a trauma, some people more and some people less. And some people have it through a generational or systematic concept, and some people have it through because they've gone personally through experiences. Some of it is you know, what we share together as humanity, and some of it is very personal, but the personal part relates us also to what pain we might go. And I know that you've gone through your own, and I hope that in this talk together and with, you know, all of the people who are with us, for them to gain what resiliency meant to you, what you have gone through, and how you're supporting yourself and others to be able to shift in creating that resiliency and moving out of the trauma that it has gotten created for them.
Absolutely, thank you, yes. So just as you said, some life experiences will, you know, we go through them and we might move on and not really, really be with that experience. And some are just so dramatic, just like the few that I went through that have absolutely defined my path and my story. And so my story, the part, the defining moment of it began at the age of 12, where I was diagnosed with a pretty rare blood disorder. It wasn't that my body was making any kind of cancerous cells. My immune system had just shut down and I wasn't making enough cells to function in a society. So I was put in isolation, and the doctors that were working on my diagnosis at the time hadn't worked with that before. So I was very alone. I didn't have any other patients to refer to see, you know, if they've gone through something similar. And we went through various styles of treatment. It ended up, we had to turn to something very, very out of our normal, which was a little bit of alternative medicine. And ultimately I was healed. And I thought life was just back to normal. When again, at the age of 19, I was re-diagnosed, this time deemed critical, this time deemed we need to immediately do a bone marrow transplant. So I was put into isolation again. And I know a lot of people can relate to that where we are today, right? Being put into isolation. I was in a isolated room, an isolated floor in a hospital, and I had very limited amount of people who could come in. They emptied out my immune system with high dose chemotherapy and introduced a perfect match bone marrow into my body, hoping that the new immune system coming in doesn't realize it's in a foreign place. Otherwise, it would begin attacking, and then that would be the end of me. And so through that experience, you know, and then after that, there was a sequence of dramatic testing life events that were taking place that at one point I had to stop. And in my book at the very end, I say, I don't think these events happened to me, but they happened for me, because there was a massive lesson. There was a massive shift in my life and in my mindset that took place after each of these events, after there was, there were so many different diagnoses after, and, a life-threatening car accident. I lost the use of my right arm, regained that back, a slow bout with infertility I had to deal with, a brain tumor. I mean, there was a different levels, and all this is in the book. And the point of it to share this is that, you know, when I was in each of these events, I felt alone, and I was physically alone, and I was also, you know, in that circumstantially alone, not knowing anyone else going through the same thing that I was going through. I had a beautiful support system around me, my family, my friends. I mean, they are the reason why I attribute a lot of my healing to them. But I was left with a very powerful tool in those times of being alone, and that was my mind and my mindset and which goggles I was going to put on and how I was going to view the situation. I was told several times after chemotherapy, you're not going to get pregnant. You're not going to have kids. I now have two beautiful children. And that was, to me, that was almost more painful than the diagnosis when they told me I wouldn't be able to have kids. I dreamed about it from age 8. I had their names and their clothes picked out, and that's what I wanted. Or they told me, even if you survive, you wouldn't have kids. If you, you know, then if this and this, if this, if this. There were a lot of painful statistics that were thrown my way that had I clung on to them and believed and truly was with them and became those statistics that they offered me, I don't know if I would be here speaking with you today. So it was.
Yeah. At one point, as you're talking about this, the question comes up, how come you didn't quit? Like any person with even one of these issues could just say, that's it. I quit. That's it. I just don't want to handle this anymore. I'm done with this. And, you know, I'll go to why me, go to being a victim of it. There's a lot that people will go through. But what keeps you and had kept you saying, okay, I got it. I'm going to work it through. Or did you even intend that? Or was it something that was intentional, or was it more like you just gave yourself to what was and then came out on the other side?
Yes, that's a brilliant question. And, you know, there were a few things that did take place that contributed to that mind, to that mentality. So initially, when you're going through something like that, the age of 12 being diagnosed is completely different than age of 19. At 12, I got to miss school. I went to the hospital. They had popsicles, and that's what that was. At the age of 19, in the same week that I got diagnosed, I had to quit my job. I had to quit school. My boyfriend left me, and my friends were jolted and didn't know how to respond to this reaction. So there were times, it's impossible to say, well, I had a positive mindset and I moved through. It was painful, and it shattered my, you know, my heart at the time. And I think that just in every single life event, and just as we look today, behind every pain, there's a list of things to be grateful for behind it. And so in those moments of what was going wrong, there was still a lot that was going right. And so anytime that there was something told to me, I looked to my right and there was a team of family and friends standing, and I looked to my left and there was family and friends. So whether I fell forward, back, left, or right, there were people who were going to catch me and were not going to allow me to fall. And that was a huge factor of my mom. She built this community around me. And I always say this, Dr. Fuja, and I say vitamin F, vitamin friends, vitamin family are so critical for our healing, for our mental health, and for everything. And so every time there was something painful in front of me, I did take an inventory of all the things that were going right and made a conscious decision to shift my attention, accept what was going on, and shift my attention towards what I did want to happen versus what I didn't. And that put me, which was very bizarre as a patient, put me in a position of power. Because as a patient, people look at you as anything. When something happens to you, people do the, aww, right? It's sympathy. And they bring your power and your worth almost down by them feeling sorry for you. And I didn't need anyone to feel sorry for me, because in those painful times, I was the strongest I was ever going to be in my life. I had to pull mental strength, physical strength to overcome these incredible events. And so it was very empowering, and it was my choice where I was going to take my attention. Was I going to focus on all the things they told me were going to go wrong, all the statistics, the death, the infertility, the everything that was going to go with that? You'll never use your arm again. You'll be dizzy for the rest of your life. I mean, all these things. Or was I going to say, well, there are people that did survive. This is what I do want out of the situation.
So what did you say to yourself, Behnoush, to be able to hold on, go through all the physical ailments, physical pain, the powerlessness that showed up in your body, having to move with it, having to become friends with your body and not be angry at your body and the world or God or universe or all of it, you know, because there's always there's so many ways we could take this. And anger is usually one way, a part of the grief process that we have. And sometimes people find themselves holding on to the anger, and some people can push beyond. And it's like, what did you have to say to yourself? How did you have to bring yourself out of, you know, the process of grieving and feeling the powerlessness, and then the next shock, and then, you know, right when you figured, okay, I can live now, and then boom, next one shows up. What would you have to say to yourself?
And so really the title of my book is called Hold On While I Hang On, because the middle decade of my life was spent just hanging on. I didn't know when the next thing was going to be, what the next thing. My friends didn't want to answer their phone. They never knew what was going to come out of my mouth of my current situation. And I think that right now we're seeing a huge shift to positive psychology, and what people are thinking, we have to think positive, we have to think positive. My freedom and my savior and my healing was accepting the situation that I was in, was not fighting it, was not denying it. Whether I threw a tantrum and screamed, I was still in isolation. I was still bald. I was still, my life was in danger. And I needed that mind space for solution versus marinating on the why me and why me and why me. I only had a certain capacity. So I was with the feelings that I had. I allowed myself to have the feelings of anger, of, you know, whatever it was. I allowed that. And then I shifted it into acceptance. Well, now this is what I have. It wasn't denying it. It wasn't, I don't want to tell people and hold the secret in me. It was, again, a conscious decision. So I accepted every single life event to free myself from holding that feeling of the worst in anger, right? Anger and fear. I let it go and was able to have room in my mind and in my heart for solution, for movement, for healing. The other thing I did, which I talk a lot about in the book, was in order to do that kind of self-reflection, I did do a series of spiritual movements. So I spent a lot of time doing meditation and visualization, and something that was introduced to me at the age of 12 when Western medicine wasn't really working. I was introduced to the energy healing potential, which at the age of 12 was comedy to me. I thought it was hilarious. I thought, I was at University of San Francisco and they were having trouble healing me, and I'm thinking, how is someone with just their mind gonna do it? And that really did support my feeling of empowerment that there are things I can do. And so when I had needles this big sticking in me or chemotherapy, body pain, I was able to go and turn within and use that power, that spiritual power, to overcome physical pain, you know, emotional pain. And so it was a blessing, because I was introduced to so many tools from the age of 12, right? So it was a long journey that got me here. And my love and my passion is to share the story, because in most circumstances, and we talk about where you shift your mindset, right? And we're leaving out, and I know you know this is what you say, without the underlying diagnosis of a mental health, you know, condition, without the therapies and the medication that's needed, we do have a power in our own mind and the focus and where it goes. And so knowing that, putting ourselves into the own driver's seat of our life, giving ourselves back that power, can create endless possibilities for ourselves. And so any situation, whether it's grand and it's a medical and you're in the hospital, or small day-to-day, being in quarantine is taking a toll on us, even being released back into the world, right? In my book, I talk about post-traumatic stress disorder. I was in isolation and then they were like, okay, go home. Well, that doesn't leave, you're not free from any type of long-term effect from that, right? So having these tools and picking and pulling both the ones that came naturally and the ones that I studied and came to me have been now my life path. And I put it into the form of a story to share with people that whatever they're going through, allow themselves the power to step up now, show up for themselves, and create that new, you know, line that they want for themselves.
So one one of the things I'm hearing from you is when life brings you something that you weren't expecting and it's not pleasurable, in how to not resist it and how to accept it. And yes, you go through your process until you accept it, but ultimately that's what we're striving for, going toward acceptance of what is. And then through that acceptance, I'm hearing you going within, finding your power within, intending what it is that you intend to have and create for yourself, and then building yourself through whatever is happening in front of you to bring your strength back, to bring your power back, to bring and shift your mind's eye to a place that is what you really intend to be, versus allowing the circumstances that are happening to dictate and take you down. When you accept, then there's a place of flow that shows up for you. And you're saying that you also got that through your meditation and being with your own energy and moving in and finding the power within in order to accept and then to find who you intend to be. And the book, Hold On While I Hang On, is a sharing of the hardship and the process that you had to go through to take yourself from the hardship toward the acceptance, through shifting the mind state, through creation of taking your power over your body, healing yourself, and then the next one happened, and then learning more and creating resiliency every time this happened, in maybe really, really getting to know how powerful you can be, or how powerful any human can be, when they utilize these tools that you've shared in your book, Hold On While I Hang On, for people to pass through what life brings for them, in a sense.
Pass through and embrace, really embrace, I think the word you said, flow, right? We after every event, there was, once there was acceptance, the flow that took place, right? When I was in the hospital, and even just simply, I didn't know that other people couldn't have bone marrow transplants because they didn't have matches. I thought whoever needed a bone marrow transplant would go to the hospital, they would get their match. Come to find out there's thousands of patients in the hospital in need of a transplant and they don't have donors. When I promised myself when I healed, I was going to create a nonprofit and I was going to connect and educate, bring awareness of how easy it is to join the bone marrow registry, swab of your cheek, and to donate bone marrow, because the only reason I'm alive and breathing and functioning physically, someone gave me their immune system, which was a few hours out of their day. And so I created the nonprofit Project Marrow, and this shaped that part of my life work. And then, the speaking, the people that I've been able to connect with my story, organizing it in that fashion, there's always been unlimited potential opportunities that have presented once that acceptance, once that clarity was available to me. Even writing the book, I convinced myself, I'm not a writer. I sat in front of you, I met you at a conference, and I just stared at you like this. You were this author and magnificent speaker. And I thought, oh my gosh, I want to write a book and I should, I can't do it. And I went and I hired a ghostwriter. I convinced myself, my narrative was that I'm not a writer. I convinced myself to, I can't do it. I hired someone, they wrote a few pages and it just sounded so foreign. Someone else can't tell my story, and convinced me, I need to write my story. And again, shifting that mindset, putting myself in the position of power, I wrote the book. And then that was a huge celebration. Then I wasn't getting published. 2 years I was submitting and I wasn't getting published. I sat on my knees in front of you talking to you. What do I do? What should I do? And you said, just keep going. Don't give up. Don't give up. And that shift, okay, I'm not. When did I ever give up? I'm not going to give up now. And I went, and I found the most beautiful, relationship with the publisher, and this right here, this little baby. Hold On While I Hang On, the lioness, the lioness that told me to continue, the lioness in my mom, the lioness in me, the women around me that supported. So many blessings. If we create the freedom and let go of what doesn't need to be there, be free from what's not serving us, allows the flow of opportunities, of connections, of love, and of success.
Behnoush, where can people find you? Your book, Hold On While I Hang On, and where can they find you for public speaking or your nonprofit organization? Please tell us.
Okay, yes. The Hold On While I Hang On is available anywhere books are sold. Right now, due to COVID-19 and some delays, what I've been hearing is that Amazon is the fastest, but anywhere books are sold, it will be available. Audio version will be coming soon. And the ebook's available right now. My website, behnoushbogdani.com, we have our upcoming Radically Shift Your Mindset for Clarity coming up on August 4th. And so it's a 6-week program where we're going to do everything that I talk about. We're going to go in this and do this together. My social media, I share tools on that. Instagram, behnoushbogdani. Just, it's not a common name. So anywhere you search behnoushbogdani, you're going to find me.
Beautiful. It's been amazing to see you again. I'm glad you're healthy and you're doing great projects. And I sincerely request from all of you to get this book, because you really will gain the concept of resilience and power coming through with no matter what shows up. Hold On While I Hang On. Thank you, Behnoush, for spending time with me again.
Thank you, Dr.
And for all of you, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone else. And see you next week.